this episode,
Boris Becker and Andre Agassi had a fierce rivalry. Andre Agassi won 10 of their 14 encounters. It didn't start out that way. Straight sets wins,
yeah.
And Agassi just couldn't return his serve. He noticed something about Becker's serve. Agassi picked up on this, and so he could read Becker's serve. He said the hardest bit was not letting Becker know that he knew.
So, what was the big differentiator?
What happened there? What was the turning point?
Welcome to Anecdotally Speaking, a podcast to help you build your business story repertoire. Hi, everybody. I'm Sean Callahan.
And hey, everybody. I'm Mark Shank.
Now, we mentioned in the last podcast that we're doing some travel. I know that I'll be in Manila the week of the 20th of May. So if anyone is interested in catching up, just let me know. It would be lovely to meet you and hear some of your stories, right? It's always good to hear stories from different countries. I find that's always fascinating how different stories are told. So,
And please, if you know a good cafe that, for coffee, then Sean would greatly appreciate knowing that as well.
Always sure good to be caffeinated. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. And we've also got trips that are likely to Vietnam, the US, and possibly even Korea in June, July. So stay tuned. We'll let you know as those plans firm up. But we're always keen to catch up with people, have interesting conversations with interesting people. And who knows, it might even lead to a podcast story.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I believe you have a story for us, Mark.
Indeed, indeed. So data is important, right? But it doesn't always tell the full story.
Yeah.
And so this is a story about tennis. And I know, Sean, that this is a sport that you're very interested in and that you did play Wally Masur back in the day.
Yeah. Probably a lot of people don't hear Wally Masur, but he was a good player, good Australian player, right? I got absolutely trounced by Wally Masur. I think in a whole match, I won 2 points, which is really sad. 2 points. Anyway, that's why he became a great success. And I just injured myself.
You can tell the story.
Now, and I can tell the story. Yeah. Anyway, your tennis
story. All right. So tennis, the 1990s, Boris Becker and Andre Agassi had a fierce rivalry. And it was one of the kind of the big rivalries in world tennis during that period. And over the course of that period, Andre Agassi won 10 of their 14 encounters. And so if you look at the data, the stats, it says that Agassi was clearly the superior player. But it didn't start out that way. Now, when Becker kind of entered the scene of world tennis, the tennis world had never seen a serve like Becker's.
Yeah, I remember. It was just blistering.
And Agassi had no defense against it. The first three times they met Becker, Becker wiped the floor with him. Straight sets wins.
Yeah.
And Agassi just couldn't return his serve. And he kind of talks about it very, he admired the fact that, he respected this incredible talent that Becker had and how, he had no defense against it. And after the third time that they met, so Becker's 3-0 up and Agassi has, he's got basically no chance against him, but he promises himself that I'm not going to lose the next match I play against him. Now, he had no idea how he was going to fulfill that promise. So he set about studying Becker, and he just watched video after video, recording after recording of Becker's matches.
Is that right?
Not just the kind of Grand Slam matches, but his matches around the world. And he just studied them.
Looking
really
for some insight.
He was like obsessive about the study that he was doing. And he noticed something about Becker's serve, and that when Becker, he noticed as Becker rocked back to start his serving motion, he would stick his tongue out. And if he stuck his tongue out to the left, it meant he was going to the left-hand corner. If he stuck his tongue to the right, he was going for the right-hand corner. And if he stuck his tongue out in the middle, And it was like a tick.
I'm assuming it's not stuck right out,
No. It's
It
just
was just a
that, no,
little bit.
it wasn't the in your ear type of, but it was like a tick, TIC. And Agassi picked up on this, and so he could read Becker's serve. And so the next time they met, he won.
Really?
And Agassi said, like, the hard part wasn't reading the serve, wasn't returning the serve, because once he had the tick, he was actually able to read the serve and he was much better. He said the hardest bit was not letting Becker know that he knew, right? And so he had to disguise the fact that he could read the serve and resist the temptation of reading it all the time. And he would only use the information on important points, kind of those points, that where you've got to,
Got to win it.
you've got to win that point, to save the game or to break serve or whatever. And over the course of, so that was 3-0, and then Becker wins his first one. Sorry, Agassi wins his first match against Becker, and he wins a 10 of the next 11 matches.
Wow, what a
And
turnaround.
in his memoir, he talks about once Becker retired in 1999, and he was sitting down with Becker over a beer, and he told him, he said, "By the way, did you know?" And he said, Becker nearly fell off his chair. And he said back to Agassi, "I used to go home and say to my wife, he can read my mind." And of course, he was just reading his tongue. So you might look at that data and just say Agassi was clearly the superior tennis player. But the data doesn't tell the full story about how that end result came to be.
That's fantastic. And it's just the picking up those little insights, those indicators of what might happen is such an important thing to get, isn't it? I saw an indicator, I sort of stumbled over an indicator in our workshops. The video that we show of the circle and the square and the triangle,
The height of video,
the height of video, I noticed that for some audiences, they laugh out loud when there's the escape of the two smaller shapes from the big square, right? Is a big square or a big circle? Anyway,
rectangle.
big rectangle. And then there are other audiences that like deathly silent. And I think it's an indicator, the ones that laugh out loud, and you hear the gasp and you hear they're the ones that are comfortable in that group. Like they have a really good camaraderie with their colleagues. And the ones that are silent, they're scared. There's something going on there. And it's an indicator, right? And so I can play that video, see that, and almost get an instant reading of how the group dynamic is for that particular organization.
Yeah, and perhaps even the wider culture
Well,
of the
yeah,
organization.
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so you do pick up on these little things, don't you? And it's like having sticking out his tongue. It's a fantastic story. I love it. So visual too, I can they used to call him Boom Boom Becker
Boom,
because
boom.
of
That's right.
that,
Oh.
because of that serve. His blistering fast serve. Cool.
All right, so what would you look, I would add boom boom to that story because that is a great detail.
Yeah, it was just one of those phrases that they used, right?
Yeah, but it also amplifies the impact, the fact that he was, his serve was something that was,
Yeah, it
out,
was massive. It
it
was massive.
was incredible. So what else could make that story even better?
Maybe, and this is just an idea, I'm not too sure if this will make it better, but I'll throw this out. And that is to be able to zoom in to one particular game. And sort of say, so Wimbledon in 1997, set point, to relay some small
Yes.
and where maybe he wins his first, that first match against Becker after the three losses, You know, what was the match? I don't know. That could be a nice little addition to the story.
Yeah, I looked at the record. There's a full record of all their matches,
Right.
And that data, that information's easily findable.
Yes. Yeah.
The details of, what was that first match? Where was it? What sort of surface was it? That's all easily findable. But zooming in even further to the point, the turning point, the point that was the turning point.
Yeah.
Let's not spend too long exploring that. That just leads me in a rabbit hole. But anyway, the moment where the match turned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you might be able to find that on YouTube too.
Yeah.
So that actual match. So that I think that could be good.
Okay. So what about business points?
Yeah. Well, I think this to me is about indicators. It's about how important it is for, when to try to find those little indicators that give you forewarning, that give you an insight into what might happen. It's not not everything is a straight cause and effect like the Becker Agassi example, but, little things that give you that sort of sense of what's going on in your organization. I remember Nancy White, the work that we did with Nancy White many years ago on collaboration. She would talk about indicators that would give you a sense of where the collaboration might happen, it was just really indicators of people being nice to each other, right? There was all these sort of things. But it's not like, the ecologists would use that sort of approach to, like, say, work out a health of a sort of a wetland or something like that. And they'd say, well, if there's lots of frogs there, you'd have a healthy wetland. But that doesn't mean you can get a truckload of frogs and pour them into the wetland and go,
hey, it's healthy.
Hey, now it's healthy, right? So it's trying to work out what those natural indicators are.
Yeah, those little signs of life.
Signs of life, yeah. So that was the phrase she used, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, the indicators. That's a good application of that story.
Yeah.
For me, it's also about the fact that your path to success isn't always a straight line, and that you might you might start off struggling badly, but that doesn't mean that's the end. Right? It just means you need to find a different way. So there's a lot of times where a team might be struggling, missing targets, or the product launch isn't going as well as it should, or whatever. And this is a story you could tell and go, look, we need to just double down on this.
Yeah.
Agassi studied obsessively to find the trigger, what was the indicator, what was the thing. And maybe we need to do the same.
And so, I think that's another business point around, the importance of studying your competition.
Yeah.
And really getting a good sense of what they're doing and how they're doing and
I'm going to do something I rail a little bit against all of the management texts, the management applications of Sun Tzu and things like that. But I actually studied the great military theorists when I was in the military. On the strategic studies as a senior officer, blah blah blah, and we're looking at Little Hart and von Clausewitz and Sun Tzu. And one of the things I remember from Sun Tzu's texts was the statement, know thy enemy, and in 100 battles you will not be defeated. And that's exactly what Agassi did.
Well, that's what he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly
what he did.
Dug in.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And I guess another one is about resilience. Yeah. Agassi could have just given up, but he didn't. He chose to respond by doubling down.
That's so right.
It's an indicator of resilience.
I was just thinking another way of telling the story, at least starting the story, would be to start off with some enigmatic reference to the tongue. Like, for example, the difference between winning and losing can sometimes be just down to your tongue. The way you hold your tongue, or something like that. And that people go, what the? It creates some sort of level of intrigue or a what the sort of response. And maybe
it's great because people will be going, what do you, tell me more, right?
Yeah.
It creates a mystery.
That's it. Exactly.
It creates a mystery. In fact, that's a, I'm going to just add a tag to this in my story bank.
Yeah.
About a mystery story.
Okay.
Because it's a great way to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, you know, in a data storytelling context, it's also potentially useful. You know, just the raw data doesn't tell you the full story.
No, you could actually put up, you know, the sets, you know, and the matches, wins and losses, and you know, and then you could show people that and sort of say, so what was the big differentiator in why Agassi went from losing 3 in a row to winning 10 out of 11 from this data? Well, there's no way you can learn that, right? It's only when you dig deeper into the tongue scenario that you find out.
Yeah. And so if you were looking at data like that in your organization, you go, what happened there? What was the turning point where the curve changed?
Yeah. I mean, we get engaged in a number of organizations to run anecdote circles. You know, they go off and they do a survey. Maybe it's an employee engagement survey. They have these really interesting patterns and they're trying to work out why. But of course, they'll never be able to answer why because they don't have the stories that underlie the data, right? And that's what the anecdote circles help them do. So,
yeah.
Interesting stuff. Okay. I think we're about time to give it a score, hey? This is a good story. I mean, because I, you know, played tennis for a long time, I want to get back into tennis. I just keep bloody hurting myself. But anyway, I think this to me is it's a 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10 story for me.
Yeah.
I was thinking 7.5, but now I'm going 7.
No, I'm going 7 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really like the story, but I don't know. It's just, I recall your last story about Penfold's Grange. It was really energizing and exciting, right? And we gave it an 8. This, I don't know, doesn't quite have that same. But you know what? Maybe it would if it had the moment in it. That's that moment.
Right.
Of
the replay
that set
or something.
Point.
Yeah.
You know, So 7 out of 10.
Now, I was thinking about just, you know, which stories, you know, you should gravitate towards. And the reason I was thinking about this is I was listening to Larry David, you know, one of the creators of Seinfeld, and now the last episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm just came out, and that'd been running for 24 years. And you think about the success of Seinfeld and the success of Curb Your Enthusiasm, they're all based around everyday things, right, that everyone experiences. Maybe everyone in New York experiences or whatever it might be. But I was just thinking, you know, sometimes the stories can be too narrow, you know. So, you know, winemaking story. It only really applies to people who really love their wine and right into the wine, right? I'm just throwing this out, right? And then, you know, a tennis story. Well, it's a tennis. But if you were to get a story which was about having children or a story about, you know, buying a car, or, you know, I'm just wondering, where should people put their story efforts, and should they be looking for stories that have an even broader appeal to a bigger market? It's like,
I think that there's a lot to what you say, and the way I would think about it is that one of the challenges is that people often gravitate exclusively to the big stories. Here's a good example of Andre Agassi and the Penfold's Grange and things like that. And they don't pay enough attention to the everyday stories. And so getting a balance, I think, is a really important, you know, being an effective storyteller in business.
Yeah.
You need a combination of those big stories, but also many, many everyday stories.
And those everyday stories are often stories that happen to yourself.
Right? Mm.
You know, I was down in the supermarket and this happened and that. You know, it's those types of stories. If they can create a point, you've got a great story. I mean, we're kind of hamstrung in a lot of ways because it doesn't make any sense for you and I to just tell our everyday stories on this podcast, because it's not as easy for people to use them. Rez was kind of forced into telling an Agassiz story or a Grange story, right? Yeah. Anyway, just
And
a
so, just as an example, I was sitting at a coffee shop in Adelaide 2 weeks ago, and having this a lady told this great example about how her son had called her, saying, "Oh, I'm in the hospital," and hung up, like she'd
What?
gone, "Where are you?" "Oh, I'm in the hospital," and she's panicking. Like, what's going on? And she keeps calling him and no answer. And then he calls her back and says, "Oh, well, I'm in the hospital because dad is not well." And oh, so when the son finally gets home, she says, "What's going on?" He says, "Oh, I just want to respect dad's, dad's privacy. And he asked me not to say anything, so I'm going to respect that." And she's like, "God, why? Just tell me what's going on with him, you know?" And anyway, she said, within an hour, one of my friends has called me saying, "What's wrong with your husband? He's in the hospital with a heart, he's had a heart attack." And just, anyway, so to me, it's a great example that when you try to control the message, you're fooling yourself, right? Because
Yeah.
people are going to find out, and so you're much better off being transparent. Anyway, it was just this everyday thing that she was talking
Yeah.
about, and I used it the next day in a workshop because somebody said transparency, and I said,
Yeah.
"Well, here's what happens when you're not transparent,
Yeah.
right? Everyone knows about it anyway."
Exactly. And it would make perfect sense to them. And it's authentic because you just heard it. And
Yeah.
right. And, I guess we're big believers in those small stories and just being, it's about noticing, right? The fact that you notice that as a
Yeah.
story, as something that could be retold. And that is a gift that you build. That's a habit you build.
And can I want to do a postscript based on exactly what you just said. And the lady's name's Wendy, and lovely, really enjoyable coffee. She told me that story, and I said, "Well, just think about it when in the context of being transparent. If you're trying," and she's going, "Oh my God, I get it. That's a lesson. It's not just an experience."
Yes. Yeah. And that, I think, and it's about working out the point of your story, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 Fantastic. Well, I'm glad I threw that little question in the end. Thank you very much for that. Now, everyone else, thanks again for listening in to Anecdotally Speaking. And of course, yeah, tune in again next week for another episode on how to put your stories to work. Bye for now.
Anecdotally Speaking was engineered by Dave Stokes from author to audio.